Some people live in guilt, consumed in sorrow, setting themselves up for a doomed tomorrow. I learned a great deal from what life has shown, like don't follow the crowd, get a life of your own. I ran the streets crazy, seen every kind of sickness, had to get a grip and straighten up with the quickness. Scrapes with the law, problems at the crib, did my share of robbing and nearly had to do a bit. Experience is taught me to check oneself and keep a balance to your physical and mental health. And if I don't give it to you, homie, then who's gonna? Instead of seeking peace, so many choose drama. Compulsive behavior, irrational statements lead to errors and blunders and actual cases. Some people treat themselves with no respect. As for me, I'm making moves with no regret. Still, it makes me wanna holler. Look up in the sky at the constellations. Look into your soul, feel a revelation. Your mind in its most positive state will connect with others who equally relate. Planets come together in a peaceful formation so we can surpass the pain and degradation. Suffering and sacrifice will not be in vain, cause the beauty that is true will always remain.
That's the Dirty Dozen Jazz Band featuring Guru from Gang Starr with Inner City Blues, also known as Make Me Wanna Holla, made famous by Marvin Gaye. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Friday, December the 21st. I can't take it. The month is going by so fast. So yes, it's Friday, December the 21st. And House Speaker John Boehner, the Republicans' point man on the budget with President Obama, is still reeling from a vote of no confidence delivered express mail by his own party members just last night. Boehner thought that he would have enough votes from fellow Republicans in the House to checkmate the president's budget with a proposal of his own, which he calls Plan B. But last night, it was a crestfallen Boehner who saw his plan and whatever was left of his wavering leadership torn to shreds. Fellow Republicans staged a revolt. They didn't like it that he was negotiating one-on-one with the president. They thought he had become much too power hungry. They thought his plan B made too many concessions to Obama, and they were not going to give him the 217 votes he needed to push his plan B through the House. So the so-called fiscal cliff still stands, although Congress remains on callback notice. Should, by some miracle, negotiations resume before year's end. So that's where Mr. Boehner is right now, licking his wounds, having been chastened by members of his own party. So we move next to the big subject for me today before, of course, we open up the phones, because it is Friday and we should have our open forum. And that means that you present your views, your news, your ideas that should be inspected for popular consideration. All right, I want to get this said because it is mind-boggling what is happening before our very eyes. You do know that there was a panel formed to look into the September 11th attack on the U.S. Embassy in Benghazi. That was done in September. The report was delivered. Hillary Clinton was ill and could not make it to any of the committees to testify. But we learned, of course, that yesterday four people within the State Department, most of them middle level to one who is a kind of an upper level person, basically on the outs. The report was a scathing one, and very interesting things about it, which we'll get to right away. But first, let's hear a little excerpt from John McCain. This is what John McCain said to CNN about the events of the day. And this is what he said.
Well, there are many unanswered questions ranging from the talking points and why classified information was not used, which would have changed the entire narrative, to what was the president and the secretary of state doing, why were the warnings ignored before and during, why were the DOD, Department of Defense, military capability available over a 7-hour period. There's a long list of questions that need to be answered, so I still think we need an independent commission, but I appreciate the testimony today.
An independent commission beyond this report that Ambassador Pickering and Admiral Mullen helped put together. What specifically do you want to hear from the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, when she testifies supposedly mid-January sometime?
Well, among other things, what did she know about these warnings, these constant warnings that she received as late as August 16th, where they stated unequivocally that in the case of an attack, that the consulate was not defensible? What actions were taken? What did she know about it? Why is it that Ambassador Stevens' last message before he was killed was his concerns about security? Why was there so few people there? There are so many, as I say, so many questions, and ranging from before, during, and after, including this whole business of giving the American people information, the President of the United States, as late as September 25th, before the UN, where he talked about hateful videos. Why did the President of the United States say in his debate with Romney that he had called it a terrorist attack on September the 12th, when now we know that very day he gave an interview with CBS, which we didn't find out until after the election, that he said he didn't know whether it was a terrorist attack or not. There's a whole bunch of, and why would Ambassador Rice say that Al-Qaeda is decimated? We know Al-Qaeda wasn't decimated. Why is it that she would say that the security of our consulates and embassies is good when we all know now that they are clearly not?
Well, that was John McCain expressing a growing point of view that this investigation is far from over and the major questions have not been asked. And I agree. I agree with him. I think this is a very important story because it gets to the root of a whole bunch of things about how a government that seemingly is liberal, that is there to present itself as a game changer. It is not doing things the old way. It is being transparent. It is doing business in a different way. But it has that familiar Clinton stench. Well, let's just put our brains to some logical thinking here. Okay. Now, a panel, the Accountability Review Board, this 5-member board that was supposed to take a very comprehensive look at the events of September the 11th, both in Libya and in the United States, and who did what, who knew what, et cetera, delivers its report. Let's stop there for a minute. The Accountability Review Board is appointed by, did you guess? Hillary Clinton. Okay. The Secretary of State is the person who appoints this board to investigate the State Department, which she heads. Any problem there? I see a problem there. Because she would not likely choose people to be on this board who she would know or believe would be adversarial to her. So the Secretary of State selects the investigation panel. It's like, you know, the police investigating themselves. Here we have friendly fire, essentially. And right there, you see something wrong. Why would the Secretary of State have the authority to name the panel that is supposed to investigate her panel? And nobody even raises the question of conflict of interest or, you know, some concern about biases or prejudices. But that was done. Okay, so she names this Accountability Review Board. And guess what? The board does not find any reason whatsoever to inculpate or blame the Secretary of State. What a shocker that is. That is very shocking. That the panel that this woman puts in place finds fault elsewhere. But nowhere in this report does her name show up as being culpable for anything whatsoever. The panel is named by her with the approval, of course, of the president. So very, very friendly people here. And I would even go so far as to say that that's how it started, that the focus would be not on the person at the top or the people at the top, that may even include the president as well as Mrs. Clinton, but the underlings. As if we are so stupid as a public to believe that underlings are in charge of this level of decision making, as if they have the authority to issue orders of one kind or another. And that's what they tried to tell us. They threw four people under the bus, as Carrie just said. There's no room. I mean, this bus is going to be running over a whole bunch of people, and they'll be all the wrong people. So they're trying to tell us that responsibility for the attack on the U.S. consulate, and we'll get to that word in a minute, really is the fault of bureaucrats, policy wonks within the State Department. So that's the first thing. Is the Accountability Review Board truly an impartial board? And it finds absolutely no reason at all to blame Mrs. Clinton, and it doesn't blame anybody in particular either. It just comes up with a general view that procedures were not followed. They didn't say, well, Joe Dokes and Pia Pokes and Mary Mokes, we found them to be responsible. They are very careful not to name anybody. But the only fault that they absolutely agree on, all five members of this panel, you know whose fault it was that they all agree upon? The fault was the terrorists. They blamed the terrorists for attacking the consulate. I kid you not. This is pretty much what they're trying to sell to the American people. Okay. So now we have all assembled, and there is a, you know, there are these committee hearings. One of them, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, is headed by whom? John Kerry, the man who is going to be tapped to replace Hillary Clinton, is the chairman of the committee receiving this information, this unbiased information. Interestingly, Mr. Kerry doesn't ask a single question. Now, he's not going to, as chairman of the committee, he's not going to allow any other Democrats to press the question if it should adversely affect Hillary Clinton or adversely affect the man who is going to name him as Secretary of State. He's chairman of the committee. This is, folks, we're not making this up. The committee hearing all of this information and facilitating the dissemination of this information, because, you know, it is a transparent administration. They're all for transparency. It's John Kerry. And we're supposed not to make any links here, as if we're supposed to pretend that John Kerry's job is to be a blocker. He's going to block things from getting too rough on Hillary or too rough on Barack Obama. He's going to keep all of the other members in line. The one thing that he did say was that he expects that whoever the next Secretary of State will be, of course, it's not known to him at this point, whoever that person would be should have a well-funded department to run. A couple of billion bucks should be thrown that way to just bring the department up to snuff, you know, for whoever that next Secretary of State should be. But, okay. All of the mayhem that occurred, the report basically says that there were close to 7 hours of fighting. 7 hours. All of that mayhem going on. And they could find only, quote, systemic failures, but no one is specifically named. And the only people named as responsible, wholly and totally responsible for the event, were terrorists. You've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. Questions that need to be asked.
Hey.
And I'm going to ask you the same thing. What questions need to be asked? Was there or was there not what was popularly referred to as a stand-down policy in place? Orders from Hillary Clinton that there should be only a minimal military presence in Libya. Was there or was there not? That never came up in the report. Her name was not connected to anything that would lead to further questions. And there are major, major questions. 4 people died here, including 2 ex-Navy SEALs who happened, as it turns out, they were not assigned military duty. They were actually civilians who happened to hear that all hell was breaking loose at the U.S. compound, and they went in there knowing that there were Americans there. They went there to see if they can stave off the attack. And that's how they died. But they fought like hell for like 6 hours. This thing was going on, 6 to 7 hours, they said. So this report is not just about procedures and internal memos and you know, what ought to happen and who. This is about lives being lost in a situation that was anticipated, that people asked for help for, did not get it repeatedly from the State Department. And in fact, this particular U.S. compound, this diplomatic compound, was deliberately undermanned by orders, presumably from Hillary Clinton. Mid-level operatives don't make those kinds of decisions. The number one person makes those kinds of decisions in concert with people like from the Department of Defense or national intelligence agencies. But certainly, as the head of the Department of State, that is the person who would call those shots. Why then was this not taken care of in the report? Why did they not see this as important to pursue? There has been no testimony from Hillary Clinton. Her illness, well-timed as it was, and they accepted the explanation that she was ill and she had fainted because she was dehydrated for the stomach virus and fell and hit her head. And so she will testify when she's good and ready in January, even though the committee is hearing the testimony in December. So she's not going to be available. So we need to ask, there was something called the State Department Rules of Engagement for Libya. These were the revised rules reportedly from Hillary Clinton and President Obama, affirming it, that after the fall of Gaddafi, the United States wanted to maintain a low profile so as not to communicate to the new regime that they didn't have confidence in this new regime, and to maintain a military presence, to assign Marines, for example, to guard the U.S. compound, according to reports, would have been a way of communicating to the Libyans that they had doubts as to the ability of this new government to assure the security and safety of Americans. So this was a kind of demonstration of faith. But all along, even the ambassador was saying, well, you know, it's looking kind of tough here. And there were concerns about the safety of the ambassador. Because for one thing, remember I said I was going to come back to the word consulate or embassy. It was a kind of, according to the report, it was not what you would consider a bona fide embassy. It was a compound, but it was not constructed with adequate safety and so forth. It was not a building that was suitable for that particular area in Libya, especially considering what had just transpired. And even in the time span when Ambassador Stevens was there, there were attacks on other embassies, the British embassy, there were bombings, there were other attacks on diplomatic personnel. So the United States State Department absolutely knew about those things because they were communicated. So these new rules, these revised State Department rules of engagement for Libya, need to be talked about. Who revised the rules of engagement? And the rules of engagement were quite specific. There were to be no military presence. There was to be no military presence, nobody with guns with bullets in them. No Americans were supposed to be there in a militaristic way to guard the embassy. Instead, that went out as a kind of contract to an American who hired locals to guard the U.S. embassy. You can't make this up. It was the locals who left the door open. It was the locals who let the attackers come through. I mean, this is basic, basic intelligence going really, really south. So why aren't we hearing this discussion? This is the discussion that we need to have. Who authorized that? And what does Hillary Clinton have to say about that? Is this a figment of somebody's imagination, or was this in fact real? And not only Hillary Clinton, like I said, these are the kinds of orders that would come from the top. So Hillary Clinton and possibly President Obama. We now come to the question of why, now we can see why, Susan Rice was marched out. Remember, I talked about this the minute it happened. How Hillary Clinton removed herself from the storm, the eye of the storm, and let it all sit on Susan Rice. They knew that there was no protest over that awful anti-Islamic movie. There was no protest. It was reported that just hours before he died, Ambassador Stevens was talking with someone who said, you know, there was nothing really much happening there at the time. And almost in the middle of, after that conversation, the protest that was a, quote, protest turned into a full-fledged attack. That's what they would have us believe. That's what they said. Remember, we covered President Obama's speech at the General Assembly, where he said that that was the reason for all of this hubbub, but that he was proud to be the president of a country that, even when speech is ugly, and even if it is directed at him, so our system allows for that. And he referenced this speech to explain the attacks on Benghazi. So who put out that information? And why? Why would they deliberately lie? And why would they deliberately send Susan Rice out as the person doing the lying? The report doesn't even address this. So while they're giving you the impression that they've done a really good job, well, they've done a really good snow job. It looks official, but it still smells of that old familiar Clinton stench. Political stench is all over this thing. And I hope that they put the screws to Hillary Clinton and compel her to come before Congress, the committees, and answer these questions. This already, you know, they're talking about procedures that have to be changed and all this kind of stuff. People have been killed, brutally murdered. And it should not have happened. And as I said before on this very program, if there's anybody who should appreciate what would happen when you do not have adequate security at embassies, it should be Hillary Clinton, because it was in the Clinton administration that we saw some of the most brutal attacks on U.S. embassies. And of course, the Clinton administration didn't do very much, didn't hunt anybody down. It was during the Clinton administration, the first attack on the World Trade Center, that we got to know the name Osama bin Laden. We got to know the name Al-Qaeda. That was Clinton. So we need answers, and we need to see Hillary Clinton testifying. And this should be more than just a procedural matter. This should be not just a courtesy, you know, pro forma courtesy. This should be a full-fledged congressional Watergate-type hearing, because there are too many answers that are needed and are not given. And this thing stinks. No matter how you twist it and turn it, it stinks. And we need to get questions answered by Hillary Clinton. I'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about what's on your mind, 888-874-4888. We'll be back right after this. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and Your calls at 888-874-4888. We have, let's see, Jay, you're on.
How are you, you trees? Happy holidays. I hope
Fine,
you
thank
enjoy
you.
These holidays.
Thank you. What's your thought?
As always, you know, I enjoy your thoughts on Hillary Clinton. But I think there, in a sense, is a bigger picture in what's going on with this situation with the fiscal cliff and the decimation of Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare, when there's absolutely no reason necessary for it, and how people are allowing the president to get away with this. I mean, you know, black leadership is not standing up at all. White leadership is not standing up at all. Nobody is standing up at all to basically deal with a situation that...
Well, I don't know that that's a fair characterization. I think there are people who are standing up. The problem is they don't know the way the politics are, set up. As you see, this is where Boehner ran into trouble just yesterday, where his own party members said, hey, listen, this isn't about you and Barack Obama sitting down in a room and then you tell us what's going on. We are here to represent the people. And the same is true on the Democratic side, that we have some people in the party who are very upset about the fact that this seems to be a closed-door process. So I think it's a bit unfair to say that nobody's doing anything. I think they're quite upset at this point. But the Republican Party is in a state of disarray. We talked about that, stemming from the aftermath of the election. They took a real brutal beating. So we have fragmentation in the Republican Party. And we have some discontent in the Democratic Party as well, because many people, I know the Congressional Black Caucus has made a very pointed concern, has aired it, that they are not going to take it lightly if many of the social service programs are touched, and they want, you know, they want to be part of that process. So that's the way the political scene is organized down there. So we'll see. We don't know yet what will come out of this negotiation process, because it's a fluid situation. But I've said we should get ready. We should brace ourselves that it's not going to be pretty. There will be cuts in social programs. I'm positive of it. Let's see. We have Sarah, is it? Hello?
Good evening, Ms. Utrecht. Can I be heard?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yes, ma'am. I do apologize. Sometimes I have a phone that I can't hear you on. Yesterday you were saying to just call you by your first name.
Yes.
The school, I'm from the old-fashioned school. My mother would rise up out of her grave, and I believe she would march to this house and still beat my behind if I was to do that. So I will call you Ms. Utrecht if you do not mind.
All right. Whatever suits you.
Yes, ma'am. What I was going to say, I was going to also wish you an enjoyable weekend and hope that you have something fun planned to do for yourself to relax.
I got laundry.
Yeah, oh, well, so do I.
That's it. So tell me what's on your mind.
Ms. Utrecht, what you were touching on with the Clinton situation and this Benghazi, it just goes to show, as you said, the privilege of white women in this country, whereby white women are more powerful than the men. They act as surrogate men when it comes as a surrogate white men. Because here it is, this, as you said, the Clintons never left office. They're still the shadow government. Barack Obama is acting as if though he's still on the campaign trail. He cannot make any decision. He cannot force white women or white men to do what he wants to do. And he is supposedly in charge of the free world, whatever that is supposed to mean. So here it is that she's going to refuse to make appearances. She had privy to information, and she is not doing it. Let me put this situation into context that you were speaking of with this Benghazi gate. This Ambassador Stevens, the U.S. Embassy is in Tripoli. It's not in Benghazi. Benghazi is like about 500 miles away from Tripoli. It's not even anywhere close. This place where the ambassador was assaulted, it was a CIA safe house. They were doing torture, waterboarding, and other things that were being done at this facility. He met the same a few hours before this attack occurred.
Wait a minute. Where are you getting that information from?
I got this information on one of these alternative news sites. I think it was called, what's that site? Cynthia McKinney was affiliated with, she writes articles. It's out of Canada, as well as some other Jamaria site that out of Libya, where the people are writing this information, as well as Paula Broadbent, the so-called mistress of Petraeus. She has went on several other talking circuits and mentioned it about this CIA that she has, because she had top clearance and what was going on over there. This ambassador, he was trading arms, and he was arming the so-called Al-Qaeda, who took
all right,
over.
What you should say when you say things like that, say reportedly, because you have no proof that that's exactly the thing.
I do apologize. I don't want to leave liable for what I'm saying.
Reported that, or allegedly, was, or so forth, but don't say it like
yes,
you know
ma'am.
It to be absolutely true.
Yes, ma'am. I will correct myself because I do not want you and your station to be liable for what it is that I'm putting out. It was alleged to have said that this Ambassador Stevens, who had met the day before, which is in the news, they can pull this information up. He had met with the Turkish equivalent to himself at this house a few hours before this attack occurred.
Right.
And this individual was selling arms, was alleged to be selling arms. This is the same equivalent to what Mark Rick, you remember Mark Rick that Bill Clinton pardoned on his last day out of the White House, mm-hmm. who was living somewhere up in Sweden or Switzerland, who was doing the same nefarious activity that give up his U.S. citizenship. I don't know if you remember that individual.
Yes, I'm listening to you.
Okay. Mark Rich was doing the same thing out in the Congo and other parts of Africa where he was trading arms.
But I want you to kind of hone in on what the point is that you're making.
Clinton. Yes, ma'am. I'm bringing it back to the Clinton, and you were talking with the John Kerry tying and all of that. So the Clintons, they knew exactly what was going on. As you said, Susan Rice was the patsy that was used because, once again, Susan Rice was not to have this job. Susan Rice never supported Hillary Clinton on her run for president. She was the first on the bandwagon for Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton never forgot that slight, and she always had an axe to grind with Susan Rice, so this was her way on the door to stick it in her back and leave it in there on her way out. Because her and a few others on the CBC did not support Hillary Clinton. They all went out front first for the African-American who was running for president and supported him. And Hillary Clinton felt as if because she made Susan Rice, her husband did in his cabinet by putting her on the secretary, had her hold the bag, so to speak, as a smoking gun for all of the Rwanda massacre and all of the other things that took place in Africa, and Susan Rice's name was used to drag through it. Even though Susan Rice was a willing participant, she had to get back at her for not backing her as a woman and another female when she made her run for the presidency of this country. And when she got a chance to be the top State Department personnel, she went after Susan Rice, because Susan Rice, as you said, she was mentored by Madeleine Albright, who's also a good friend of Hillary Clinton, as well as Samantha Powers, all of these women that run in that circle.
So what is the question that should be raised, that you want to raise about Hillary Clinton and this report?
The question I'd want to know with Hillary Clinton, I said, is what Hillary Clinton know and when she knew it, why is she playing, as we always make these funny comments, oh, you must have fell and bumped your head. I guess in this case, Hillary Clinton has literally fell and bumped her head and forgot what the heck happened for the past 3 to 4 years.
Well, Hillary Clinton is one of the few first ladies who, having been deposed in criminal proceedings as often as she has, she knows how to say, I do not recall. Thanks a lot for calling, Sarah. Ed from New Jersey, you're on.
Therese, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you, Ed. How are you?
I'm good.
What's on your mind today?
I'm sorry?
What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, in terms of your conversation about the Benghazi massacre, I think that when you talk about, you know, who was thrown under the bus, it seems like the entire American public was, in a way, because immediately they just seemed to allude to the video, and, you know, we won't go into all that we already know. But I found that during the memorial services, when the president and Hillary were there with the families and the caskets were brought in, it seemed like a moment for just Hillary to again give consideration more so to the memorial services, but just to vindicate herself more than, you know, just memorialize the deceased for. And I knew right then and there that this was just a cover-up and a sham. So I think that the entire American public has had just been thrown under the bus. And what's really humiliating besides that is, you know, we often watch where the Westboro Baptist people will show up at the funerals of these young soldiers. And then, you know, it's said, well, it's their right. That's why people are over there fighting for us to, you know, retain our freedom of speech. And yet they go around the world and put out a video trying to, you know, apologize for the freedom of speech that these young people are fighting for. So it's so contradictory, and it's just unfortunate that this is the politics of today that's full of deception. And, you know, you're just trying to read between the lines, and no matter what, she'll never come out, I think, and just be honest. And that's her whole agenda, is to just continue the deception. And I don't think it matters to her. I think she just continues to laugh in the face of any tragic event that might unfold.
I think the committee, a congressional committee with some teeth in it, with subpoena power. See, right. This inquiry had no, this was just, you know, a formalized version of a Q&A. A committee with subpoena power, that is, a committee with the right to indict or to level charges against somebody, that's the kind of committee that you need to conduct this. This thing is so huge because out of this, we will get to know all the details, including the details referenced by Sarah, who called before you. Was this a CIA operation? Was this a place where people were being tortured? All these questions will be asked and under oath. And that's what you need, because it's really, really outrageous that they expect people to believe that a thorough investigation was done. Thank you, Ed, for your call. This is what's missing. We need subpoena power so that people know that this is not a joke. This is not one of those formalities where, you know, if you feel like you have a bump on the head, you can stay home and rest. And next thing, you know, you might even claim that the dog ate your homework or something. But when you formalize an inquiry and the option exists, I mean, they still do have the option to go all out on a thorough investigation, because there's something fundamentally wrong here. And we all sense it. We all sense it. And it's outrageous that this is being done in front of us. I mean, they're not even hiding this stuff anymore. They're not hiding this. It is being done in your face. And, you know, like the Groucho Marx line, you know, do you believe me or your lying eyes? You know, that's what they say. You believe us or your lying eyes? There is something wrong here. And we ought to have Mrs. Clinton, we ought to have a hearing or some venue in which we hear all of the questions asked and answered. And they go beyond the specifics of the attack, but the specifics of the attack are bad enough. Because when you read some of the accounts of what happened, how these few guys were trying to hold off just a wall of people coming at them, the ferocity of the fight, that it was stacked against them, and still these guys stayed behind to see if they could rescue anybody and lost their lives as well. You see the pictures of Ambassador Stevens, some good folk came to his rescue and tried to pull him out, hoping that he was still alive and whether they could get him medical attention soon enough. His body is blue. and you can see smoke all around his mouth. He died a really horrible and excruciatingly painful death. This is not something to just dismiss, and they should not get away with it. Well, as we come to the end of our program, I just want to make a couple of notes, share them with you. Next year, I'm going to start a feature on things that work. Little programs or ideas or people who are doing things, large or small, it doesn't matter, but people who are involved in reconstruction of communities and all the different ways that that could be looked at. Maybe it's, you know, there was a woman in Brooklyn who just planted magnolia trees, and she became very famous for that. And her one contribution still stands today, which is the beautification of the community. Or people who give up their time to mentor students. Or people who feed the homeless. So we're going to be talking about solutions that are community-based, community-controlled, and that are making a major difference in the lives of others. The aim here is that when we tell these stories, we get a sense that if each of us does what we can in our own way, we'll make life a little bit better. I enjoy getting your notes and your little hints at programs I should do. Drop me a line at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. And stay tuned. Coming up next, Occupied Territory with Mike Fader.
And the fables will burn, and that which is pure will then shine through. So it's time to leave the negative thoughts behind you. Inhale and breathe the good air in. Exhale, release impurities within. If you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. Let's see what this new day brings.